Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life.
Welcome back to Idle Red Hands. I'm Wayne.
I'm Lyle.
I'm Chris.
I'm Yujiro.
And I'm Tom.
Yeah, welcome, Tom.
Yeah, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and welcome back, Yujiro.
At least I can do.
Welcome back.
For introduction's sake, Tom is joining us here because we're doing campaign confessions today, talking about our recently finished campaign, D&D 4E, titled Red Hands, and he was one of the players along with it, so I wanted to grab his opinion on the game and the story and all that good stuff.
Yep. Just so you know, it's actually my first time playing a D&D game. It's my very first time, so
newbie.
Now I'm sure how it was compared to other ones. But yeah, it was lots of fun.
Yeah, it probably would be a pretty positive start. Yeah, I can say. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah, Campaign Confessions is going to be is what we're going to do after we take a hiatus on all of our campaigns, is we'll look at, it'll be two episodes for Campaign Confessions, and we'll look at the system, so in this case D&D 4E. And then the second part of the Campaign Confessions would be looking at the actual story, basically, and we'll be looking at that in part two. I think that was self-evident.
All right.
I'm going to shut up for a while.
So, I was going to say, Chris, since you ran the game, do you want to start off with what?
Nothing? We got some hand signals.
Okay, all right. Apparently that hand signal means continue talking. So you want to start us off, I guess, with...
That was a thumbs up.
Yeah. Because hand signals usually mean shut up.
Yeah, I know.
Sounding good.
Fine. Why did you choose 4E?
Yeah, it's a really dumb and easy answer, but it was there, much like Everest.
So why did we use Everest?
That was the D&D 4E had just come out, and we had been talking about starting up a gaming group, and so it seems...
Or I guess moving our board game group into a role-playing group,
since
we found out we were all closet role-players.
Which is why we were playing in a closet.
that's the last joke I make. It was supposed to be a comment on the size of the room we're playing.
I think I got a different hand signal for you.
That one? Is it that one?
Fine. That is the last joke I make for the remainder of this two-part session.
Sadly, I don't believe it. Just kidding.
But don't you guys always try new versions of D&D when you come out?
Well, this was the first one to come out in how many years?
I don't know, like five?
Wayne and I were playing D&D 3.5. Mm-hmm. We were playing with another guy, but he dropped out. So it was basically turned into one-on-one.
Right.
And we actually had two games going, one where I would be the DM and one where he would be the DM. Mm-hmm. And then we just kind of shelved that to start something new.
Right. So is it all your first times to try
4E? For 4E, definitely.
Okay, they were on the same boat then.
Yeah. I played first, second, and I had 3, but I didn't actually play it. I played 3.5. Mm. Yeah, there wasn't much of a gap between 3 and 3.5.
I don't think I actually played 3, but 3.5 was just a cleanup of 3.
Yeah.
Sort of. So yeah. I guess I essentially played it.
Yeah, I started in 2, but that was more of those teenage days where you had your maxed out character just take on gods and kill them and then kill the next god the next week. And
so, I was a little disappointed not to see that in
Okay. Hey, give it some time. Give it some time. You played a lot of 3.5, right, Yuge?
No.
Oh, no.
Oh, really?
That's really, yes. Baldur's Gate and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah, and Neverwinter Nights.
That's based on the third edition.
Third edition.
Yeah. So I guess Neverwinter Nights, I played 3.
It's an accurate representation of the rules, so... Although I played Temple of Elemental Evil, that's fairly 3.5.
That's actually a really... For what I actually liked the game, it was a bit of buggy. It needed a lot of patches and stuff. But actually, a Temple of Elemental Evil I thought was a really good game, and I thought it was actually a really good simulation of the rules in that it was turn based and things like that. So maybe a pure computer gamer might not like that or appreciate that, but I really enjoyed that.
Oh, I loved it.
Because you could plan. You would plan and go, oh, if I set him up here, then I'd block that. You know. It definitely played into the chessboard aspect that 3.5, and 4E use a lot in combat.
Did any of you guys try out D20 Star Wars ever?
No. Strictly because I loved the D6 West End games, and I thought Wizards absolutely destroyed the system of D20. Okay. So I purposefully made a point to not pick it up or not look at it.
Okay.
I did buy the Saga. Mm-hmm. Version of it. I think it's called, it's based off the Saga, but it's not the D20, but it's this one that follows. So this maybe the second edition of the Star Wars, okay. D20 Star Wars.
The only reason I bring it up is because we were talking about video games. The KOTOR, Knights of the Old Republic Star Wars game, based off of the D20.
Do that. KOTOR. Go and say stuff like that. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Anyway, yeah.
That's too far off topic, but that was also a D20 based video game, though. So.
I have it, but I just haven't gotten around to playing it.
It's a fantastic game. Really should try it out.
It's on my computer.
It's got two thumbs up.
Yeah, right now I'm playing chess whenever I play a game on a computer, because I can finish that in a few minutes.
Oh, cool.
Which says a lot about my chess skills.
Oh, so you mean you're losing the game?
I know, I've gotten it up to level 3, and there's 10 levels.
Yeah.
And I can win on level 3.
Program.
It's Chess Titans or something.
Yeah. I love how I'm ridiculing you. I got my ass beat on level 1.
Now, I'm sure this is riveting for our listeners.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway.
What did you guys think of...
I'm taking it old school.
What did you guys think of the fourth edition?
Oh, it's a very broad question.
The system. In general.
Oh, well, let's start. What did you guys... Even if you haven't played a previous edition, or you played a previous edition in a video game, computer game, what did you like about this? Like, what was one thing that you liked about 4D?
Oh, the power system. Absolutely. I mean, the fight now, because in 3.5, your fighter would just pretty much swing his sword, charge. What was it? Full round action, just attack, attack, attack.
Right.
Now it's kind of like you're a lot more mobile. You've got neat powers to pick each round, and it's just combat's a lot more interesting, I thought. So
before, you guys didn't have powers?
No. The fighters didn't. Yeah.
Not as much. Like wizards and clerics and whatnot, they had spells, which were very similar to powers, but...
Okay.
Also,
like now the 4E, the regular fighters can have different types of attacks.
So I saw a lot of space. I kind of agree. It's kind of like sort of like the powers. Yeah, they were cool, but kind of like everybody had them, and it either kind of, in my opinion, like turned everybody into a wizard, kind of, and that they had these powers, or kind of made everybody like a fighter, right? It kind of made the character classes the same. Mm-hmm. Because everybody had these same things that essentially kind of did the same thing, just maybe in a different way. Mm-hmm. Where in 3.5, the fighter would fight stuff, and...
Or you basic attacks?
It was well, I guess it would be
before
the equivalent of basic attacks.
Right. Yeah.
I think third edition in 3.5 actually had feats as well.
Okay.
That's the edition that introduced that idea. Although second edition did have like an optional rule book.
Yeah.
That did have something like those. So I say, I don't think, for the fighter at least, because that's what I played in our campaign. Mm-hmm. I played a fighter, and I know you played a rogue, so I guess that's good. Similar.
So, yeah.
But I didn't really feel that the powers, I had no necessarily any problems with the powers. I didn't really feel that they dressed up my options as much as people thought. I don't think it really added anything to like what I did tactically, and then maybe that's how I played it. But I think a lot of times it was just you were going to, this is an encounter and it does a lot of damage. So when I get up where I can do that damage, I will do that. And I think a lot of the little tricks in that, I think the previous 3.5 or whatever, they had those in your feat. Like the feats did stuff. Like for example, cleave. Is an at-will power for a level 1 fighter.
Yeah.
And that, there was a cleave feat.
Yeah,
and it, they did something slightly different, but it was, you still had something where you were hitting somebody else with it.
That's only when you, drop a guy, so it's kind of like, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I mean, you could argue one is better than the other, but I don't think that the power inclusion 4E was... made combat that much more exciting and suddenly opened up the worlds of creativity and that, which is how some people try to sell that. And I just disagree. I think that like if you're going to jump on top of a, you know, giant's head or whatever and wail on him with your sword, there was nothing in my powers that really helped me to do that. So when I did that in an actual combat, there was really no point for me to do that. I just kind of was trying to get into the spirit of the, you know, the that combat, you know, like that would be what you would see in a movie.
Right.
And I'm up there going, well, he doesn't really have any eyes, so it's not like I'm going to wail on his eyes, so I'm just hitting him on the head, which I could have done in any edition of D&D.
I'll kind of argue that, like, the powers, maybe for fighters anyway, kind of would limit creativity.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, you go from 3-5 where, all you have is pretty much standard attacks, which you can flavor any way you want. You know, you jump off a table, you swing on a chandelier, and, you know, they're a lot more open because they are simple, whereas, you know, the powers are very regimented, like shift 2 squares, make a basic attack, and do something else. Like, the powers tell you exactly what you do, and it's a little bit harder to kind of open them into, you know, I guess, realms of creativity a little bit, because they are
so
specific.
That's what I liked about it, how they're all, like, clearly defined.
Hmm.
Well, I can definitely see that, because it, although, you know, you would have, like, maybe you're sitting there trying to choose your power, and that might slow down your personal decision-making process, but there was never...
Unfortunately, it never took place during, like, any game sessions. But,
I don't think the sarcasm came across right.
No. Oh, okay.
You could have made that in a closet. there's a lot less cases there of dispute. I can only recall one where we actually disputed the actual rules. Where we had
the effect line?
Yeah, where we actually had to pause the combat to go over that rule.
Bloody combat,
too. It was final combat. There were still a bunch of combats after that.
Yeah, it didn't go for a long time after that. But
In there, I can definitely see where being clear-cut is the selling point. My only... Yeah. I have no problem with the powers. I just don't
see them as being what?
I guess an avenue to creativity or things like
I definitely don't see the powers as an avenue to creativity. I just see them as kind of like more tools to kind of like play around with.
I did like the cards, where you can make them into cards and that.
Okay. Although the new character building system kind of sucks. Got to keep on paying or else you lose your character or something.
Oh, well, that's not really
a different system.
Yeah.
I think, just to disagree with everything you just said, I think it kind of sucks in contrast to what DDI, Dungeons & Dragons Insider was before.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was quite cool, and I actually bought a new computer to get it and find out that they changed it. I would have switched over to Mac, probably.
All right, well, while we're on the topic, what about character creation in 4E, mechanics-wise?
Well, it's kind of similar for me. You choose everything on details, categories, so I found it pretty simple.
Do you mean, like, the creating them as in the process of it, or...?
I meant kind of more from, like, a mechanics-wise.
Well, I think it's really cool that there's so many options available for it. I mean, there's a few hundred feats for it.
A few hundred? I thought there was last count up to, like, what, like,
a thousand? Whatever the number is. And so that's great to have that many options for
it. That's too much, though.
Exactly,
it takes so long to decide what you want to do.
I totally agree. And that's the thing, is I think that they've made... The characters are no longer accessible with just pen and paper. Mm. It's almost that you need that that interactive program to do it with, which... You know, it's not a bad thing because it's online, you can access it wherever, but it's still, I don't know, it seems like a bit much. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, I think making it on paper is about as difficult as it maybe has always been, or at least as difficult as it was in 3.5, which I think then can be a little bit difficult for newer players to do it on paper.
Definitely, yeah.
But... When you get used to doing it on the computer, there were times, like, there were certain levels that would I be like, why do I have it at this level?
Mm-hmm.
Just because I hadn't been doing it on paper, you would just be leveling up on the computer, and it would adjust all your numbers for you. So you actually forget what the rationale is for some of the things.
Like, sometimes you look at your cards, and you're like, why is my bonus this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, you accept it, and you're like, all right, that's my bonus. But then to break it down, you know, like, oh, because I took this feat and that. I guess when you did it on pen and paper, yeah, you actually were very much aware of everything that you've taken and what it's contributed. And you might make a little mistake or whatever.
But I think it was kind of easier to remember because you were
took
calculating
three powers
yourself.
Too well.
But yeah, I think, you know, when you do the attributes, and I like the attribute system, which they had in 3.5 and that, where you do, you know, you just plug in the numbers and you do a little point by. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fun. You can quickly make up a little character.
Yeah.
Don't they have point by in 4E too?
Oh, yeah. They do it. Yeah. So they have that in 3. I enjoy doing stuff like that, you know. Because some, if you get a pure point by system, you just can't just jot down your character. You're just like, oh, geez. Because I'll spend this amount of points on my attributes, but am I going to have enough points for my skills and stuff like that? I mean, it's really flexible, but I like, sometimes you really want a segmented style, like White Wolf, World of Darkness system, or the upcoming...
What, Ubiquity system?
Ubiquity system that we're going to play. Yeah.
White Wolf 2.
Yeah, White Wolf 2.
Yeah, Fate's actually pretty similar to that, too. It's not a pure point buy, but it's similar.
Yeah.
So kind of like chunks. You buy, like, here's your skills, here's your... Right. Here's your
not necessarily. Like, one of the conversions that I found that I'm... thinking about using for the next leg of the campaign. Shock! They have, you can create powers for it, which are similar to the D&D style powers, but they cost, like, character refresh points, etc.
Okay.
Anyway, this is for a later episode.
Alright. So, Wayne, what did you like about 4E?
Put on the spot like that, I'm not sure.
okay, Tom. Give you a moment.
Yeah. Specifically,
I just kind of thrown out.
It was a spit take there.
Yeah, I know.
I didn't know we were dialoguing on this podcast.
Tom.
Well, right, what did you like about
before
it?
Before, in the earlier versions, did you guys have skill challenges? Or the skills, match of skills?
The skill challenges?
Yeah, that before?
Where we went around the table and everybody chose their
skills. Like was that before? Was that new?
No, that was something new that D&D introduced. It was kind of a house rule that got really popular that a lot of people used in 3.5.
Because I liked that a lot.
I enjoyed that too. I thought
that was another good chance to be very, very creative, to see what you can use the skills towards.
Or to be very uncreative. I athletics my way across the
court. Oh, man.
What else could I do? All you could run across the field.
The way you could have flavored it, like I tumble and then leap over the fire. Like, not
no,
the,
the fire would have just gotten in the way. So
flavor it up.
Go around the fire, you know.
Like Mosey.
No, that's fun.
I really enjoyed that as well, and I thought it really could really dress up what could have been like a standard encounter or maybe a combat that's just too big to play it out with the combat rules. So I really, really appreciated that.
I like how we kind of changed to that after we fought the last boss and we had no time and it was kind of dragging on. So we said, we got to stop it here and change to a skills challenge at the end.
Yeah.
That's kind of good.
There's actually a specific reason I did that.
Yeah.
I was just thinking, man, this is going to take forever, so
exactly. Throw it in. Yeah. I like that. That's kind of fun.
Well, the other skill challenge we did when we were moving troops across the field.
That was really fun.
I liked that one.
That was my favorite one. Yeah. But maybe talk about in the story.
Yeah.
In part two.
It was weird. When we started out, the first few were kind of clunky, but that was partially my fault, because I changed, I house-ruled it after the first two, I think, that we did. But, I agreed. Like, that combat one was really fun. I think it was because we had a situation where there are a lot of troops coming in, not to get too into story, more the mechanics of it, but we had little sets with beads representing how many troops were in each. So as the skills were won and failed, we took the beads away from that to kind of represent troop strength and such. Worked out really nice.
Yeah, I really liked that.
Yeah, I thought that was good. Yeah.
Yeah. So if anybody's running skill challenges, I might recommend that. Like, keep instead of like keeping a number, how this is how close to the goal you are, you could keep like points to it, how many you are away from winning and whatnot. That's fun.
Yeah. Are you warmed up, Wayne?
this is going to sound pretty crappy, but like compared to 3.5, like, honestly, or other versions I've played, like nothing really stands out as being, I loved that, or that was awesome.
Okay.
There was nothing like totally different then?
Well, there was a lot of stuff that was different, but I think like the sum total, I
nothing really stands out as being really awesome or that much better than other versions of D&D I've played. So it kind of sounds like I'm copping out there, but
a little bit.
I like the skill challenges. Those were good.
To follow up then on what Tom's saying, I actually liked how they simplified the skills, where they reduced the number of skills that were available.
So hide and move silently, you've just got stealth.
Or athletics, you know.
So it was more detailed before then?
Yeah,
there were a lot more.
Like athletics, like all the little sub skills, if you will, they were actually separate skills.
Oh, I see.
So you'd be like, if you were a fighter in previous editions, you would be like, do I want to put it in jump? Do I want to be able to jump? Or do I want to be able to swim? Or, you know, because you didn't have a lot of... Yeah, recline. Because you didn't have a lot of skills.
Right. I agree, but I think that they overdid it with that.
I'll agree with that. I think they...
How so?
Okay, craft.
Right.
I mean, even we had a game that had no focus on craft. Nobody tried to build anything. But there were still two or three occasions where that skill would have been useful. And people are looking at the sheet saying, what the heck do I use for craft? Diplomacy or athletics?
Oh, you mean the fact that craft is no longer a skill?
Exactly. And it's not that I'm suggesting they need a craft skill, but they need something that can be used as that. Same thing for a leadership when you guys were giving a rousing speech in the village like that.
Well, that's diplomacy.
Yeah.
Is it?
The Hollowed Earth Expedition, actually, leadership is covered under diplomacy.
Well, either that or... Or
it makes sense to me.
You would use your charisma stat.
Yeah.
So
that's which connected to diplomacy, but yeah.
But or like if it's not diplomacy, you would just use your charisma stat.
Sure. Yeah.
So craft.
I can see a stronger argument for leadership. You know, you're like, well, do you really need to?
Something different.
Right? Yeah.
I can see what you're saying. I don't know. I think.
Or what about perception? How perception.
It's much better currently.
Yeah.
Previously was spot and listen. Two separate skills. Yeah. That's dumb.
Spot right. And search?
Search.
Probably search was. I don't remember.
I think it was kind of. I thought search was only for like traps and things like that.
But still, like, why can't you just put them all under?
There might have been separate ones. There might have been like search for traps.
Probably.
And search room. I don't quote me on that.
Yeah,
but even so, like spot and listen, just to combine those.
Agreed.
And, you know,
absolutely.
You're not exactly making like the, you know, the blind. It's like, well, you know, I'm just going to take zero on spot because, whatever.
I think somewhere in the middle would have been good.
Yeah, like, it made sense to combine some of the skills, obviously, like athletics. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'll agree with Chris that I think they went a little bit overboard in combining or just dropping certain skills.
Okay, but you're dropping, but the combination, I haven't really heard. So you're saying you're fine with the combination.
I'm fine with the combination.
Combining,
because obviously, perception.
The actual,
spot and listen into perception, those athletics.
Yeah.
The one thing I kind of did miss was 3.5 had the skill points.
Agreed.
Right, you gained so many skill points per level based on your class, right? Like fighters got 4 skill points a level, rogues got like 12 or something.
Oh.
And I liked how that allowed you to customize your character. Like you're either trained or untrained, and your skill kind of base is based on your level. Like I know why they did it; it simplifies things, and it makes them, you know, obviously a bit quicker, but it makes everybody, in my opinion, sorry, keep cutting off. It makes everybody the same. I liked that little customization where, you know,
I see your point, but I didn't see it as really as a way within 3.5 as enabling you to really customize your character all that much. And for one thing, they often just use the skill points as a way to kind of balance the character. So your cleric, who would probably actually genuinely, because the cleric studies a lot and would probably actually have a lot of skill points, hardly has any skill points. So you really can't customize your cleric all that much. And what they're doing is balancing it, because clerics get spells, and they get their domain spells, plus they can fight a little bit, so they're like, wow, he's fighting a lot. Yeah, this guy's really good, so we can't give him too many skill points, or we're making an unbalanced character.
Less than from a role-playing sense, I really liked that part of 3.5. I thought it was a really eloquent way to balance the characters.
Yeah, I agree.
Like, I thought a rogue is is, a rogue is, you know, they call him a skill monkey for a reason, and they give him a ton of skill points. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah.
So rogue can then go into different directions, but people like fighters or clerics, what direction can they go in?
Well, I think that's the point of it, though.
Fighter basically has to choose between, do I jump or do I swim?
And
if I do spend more points on swim, am I somehow customized? Am I like Namor, you know, Lord of the Mantis?
Well, no, but I'll say this.
I can just swim a little bit better.
But when we were doing 3-5, and I had that barbarian, right? Like, I actually considered putting skill points in perform.
Yeah.
Just as a story point to kind of represent the fact that she's studied these kind of like epic poems of her homeland. And like the skill points as could actually be used more as like a role playing tool, like, hey, my fighter, believe it or not, actually studies poetry. And that's where his points in perform come from. Right? So
Can't climb a rope.
He can't climb a rope to save his life, but you know what? He can palm his way out of any situation.
God, I kind of tore a hamstring when I was younger. I'm not even able to jump that. Yeah, but I can sing.
There's
some
water here, you know, I'd be great. But
can't even do that. All right. What I liked about it is kind of. I kind of felt like, you know, I like superheroes. I'm probably the biggest fan of superheroes of the group. And I kind of felt like, even at first level, we were kind of like, I felt like a hero. And I know that was one of the things that they aimed to do in making 4E. And I think they actually accomplished that. We kind of felt like we were really a cut above the average person.
Yes.
And, you know, I played the Eladrin, so I had face step, and I really liked that. You know, it was a bit outrageous. It's really high fantasy, but I got a lot out of that one ability. And, you know, I kind of felt like, you know, Nightcrawler. Mm-hmm. And what can I do with that one little ability? So I enjoyed that. So it was maybe not a fantasy style I'd always want to play. So if somebody were to say, we're only going to play humans in this fantasy world, or I want it to be a little gritty in that, cool. But I might not want to do a 4E version in that gritty one. I might want a different thing. But to play that high fantasy, a lot of fun, then I thought, yeah, we're all cool right from the get-go.
Yeah.
So, and I probably enjoyed some of the earlier combats. Because of one, I realized because of a flaw that in the system that I should bring up next.
Okay.
Which is?
Anyway, when we get to the things that we didn't like about the system.
I was going to say, I guess before I do that, does anyone want to like have something else they liked or comment on the heroic?
I don't. Chris, what about you? What did you like about the system?
Well, it's already, as we've gone all the way around the table, it's already been covered. I liked the simplification of the skills for it, and I liked how each skill had a way that it could be used in combat. As part of it, you guys almost never used them, but you could bluff and intimidate and do athletics and acrobatics.
I don't think like all the skills could be used that way, but like, yeah, you could have used bluff to feint your opponent, and then you get combat advantage next turn,
right.
You could have used intimidate on a bloodied foe to force them to surrender. But like looking in the rulebook, because I actually kind of built my next character with that in mind. It was only like an encounter power. You could only do it like once per encounter.
Oh, really? I didn't
realize that. Which I thought was pretty lame, to be honest. And sorry, I realize I've hijacked your time to speak.
No, it's quite alright. You presented better than I could have, so it's all good. What else? I really liked the Arcana skill, how Detect Magic became a skill roll. I thought that was...
So was it before?
Before it was actually a spell, so...
Oh yeah.
Only wizards who have that spell have that ability to do it. Mm-hmm. I really like how anybody can try now to sense magic. There was another one. Maybe religion as well had something similar to that. I liked the tactical game that was 4E a lot. One of my criticisms of it is the same as yours, Wayne. I don't think that it made for a very good role-playing game, but I think that it made for a great tabletop game.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. That's, we're on the positive side of things, but yeah.
No, I was just going to disagree that it made for... I don't know if it made for a great...
Tactical
game or whatever.
Well, I was going to say, I've heard other people on other podcasts specifically say that D&D 4E is essentially two games. The role-playing game and then the tactical combat game.
Well, we'll get into that when we get into the negative stuff. One thing, leveling up was fun. Leveling up was always, there are so many juicy bits. Every level you get something, you get a new ability, new ability scores, new powers, new kinds of stuff.
Mm.
So it was always something to look forward to the next level up, so that was cool as well.
At the pace that we leveled up, was that the normal pace?
it was much slower than it should have been for a while, and then it was much faster than it should have been for a while to make up.
The problem, and I was going to talk about this in part two, but just the problem with our actual campaign as opposed to the system just was the scheduling.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like we could never play the game weekly.
Right.
Which makes it hard to judge how quickly you would level up or not level
up.
So I think the pace kind of suffered because of our schedule as opposed to the system mechanics. And
limited
like
time
that.
As well. They recommend that about every 10 encounters or so you should level up. But one encounter a week, for one encounter per session, and then we get 3 sessions per month?
Right.
I mean, that's...
Yeah.
That's true. Okay. Yes. Yeah, but I do agree, yeah, definitely... And I always like this about D&D and all the editions, is that it's always nice to play a game with levels. Even if that's not your preference, if you want to play a game that you're free to expend your experience points or whatever points, however you want, that's fun too. But it's also fun, you level up, because then you can kind of look forward to your limited options it's kind of like... getting something on, like a little present and things like that. You get kind of excited. So it's always nice to play that. And 4E did do a good job of making it so you do get something under the tree, So maybe, it wasn't a great year for the mummy and daddy, but they put something under the tree for you. It's like,
I don't remember 3E or 3.5 that well enough to remember if you got something at every
there
level.
There wasn't, and that was actually one of the criticisms that they tried to fix with 4E.
I think you always got something, but you didn't get a choice.
Yeah, maybe you got
a fighter, your
attack bonus goes up.
Yeah, your attack bonus goes up every level, because that's one of your things in the fighter.
Yeah, you get something.
But you get feats every other level. But you're getting something, but you're not choosing something, right?
So just bigger numbers.
So I guess it'd be like imagine on Christmas, and let's say your parents took you to the movie on Christmas Eve, and then on Christmas morning you come down and it's like, oh, what about my present?
Yeah.
And they go, oh, we took you to the movies last. Oh, was that my present? Oh, okay. Yeah. Does that count? I remember you ever get presents when you passed. You pass grade 1, you go to grade 2. Obviously not when you're in high school or something like that, Oh, great, I'm now in grade 11. What's my present? But when you're a kid, my parents, and a lot of parents would get their kids a little something for passing gift. And I got that Boba Fett.
Oh, cool.
That really big Boba Fett. And the Muppet movie had come up. So my mom took me to the Muppet movie. But the present was Boba Fett.
Mm.
So I remember bumping into a classmate, and he's like, oh, I said something. I said, oh, I got Boba Fett for passing. What did you get for Boba Fett? What did you get for passing? And then he kind of goes, I don't know, Mom. What did I get for passing? His mom's kind of like, this movie. And he's like, oh, I got this movie. And I said, I was wise enough, I'm glad I didn't say anything more. Like, oh, well, I got this for fucking nothing. But I was like, oh, that's pretty cool. Oh, this is part of mine, too.
Yeah.
Hi, guys.
So Lyle was diplomatic even at a young
age. No, I've said some pretty dumb things even now. But, that's a prouder moment for me, how just kind of let that go. It's like, kind of got this, read the situation really well and was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't get anything for passing.
Really?
For my high school graduation, I got a watch. Yeah. A garage sale watch.
Well, that's a garage sale watch more than I got.
It had a plastic band on it. It was the cheapest thing. I needed a watch, so it was good, but it's just, Mom didn't even really try.
I feel kind of bad. I guess you really are on the ghetto.
I would have killed for that Boba Fett, man.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I actually got the Boba Fett. I just missed, the Boba Fett, the actual little action figure. Sorry, this is off topic. But and the missile came out.
Oh yeah,
and probably took some kid's eye out, so they discontinued that. I almost got that because you could only get that Boba Fett by sending away for it before Boba Fett was available in the stores, and I sent away for it. But it took a long time to get that Boba Fett. I think it's because they have to do the recall.
Oh.
So I ended up getting a Boba Fett where the rocket couldn't shoot out. But I got the Boba Fett from the send-away, not from buying it in the store.
Wow. Yeah.
That was pretty cool. Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah. I remember I got my R2-D2, and I had never even seen Star Wars. I didn't even know what the R2-D2 was. I was like, it's a robot, but I remember, like, this is a cool toy, but I had never seen the movie, because it hadn't come to, I was living in Edmonton at the time, it hadn't come to Edmonton yet. Somehow my dad got the toy or whatever, and I was like, oh my god, it's a trash can, it's a cannon, oh, it's an awesome toy, and it's like, then once you see the movie, you're like, oh, I gotta get everything, and it just becomes a collecting mania. Anyway, well, how about things we didn't like about the system?
I didn't like how I talked so much. Oh, wait, that's not part of the system.
Sorry.
I need you to wake up. Wake up.
Sorry. Regaling us with these doubles.
No, yeah. Someone other than Lyle want to go first?
Okay, so right, negative stuff about 4E.
Well, you complained about it taking stuff. So,
well,
Chris, could you go first?
Sure, happy to. Overall, I prefer 3.5 to 4E. Mostly because I found that 4E was more, I thought I was too focused on the tabletop of it and not enough on the role-playing aspect.
Okay.
If I had a gavel, I would bang it and yell second.
Yeah. Like, everything that could have been considered as, like, role-playing based, like the skills or the flavor, it was still all focused on the combat. That was my primary criticism.
Well, the way I saw it is kind of like they give you the rules for all the combat stuff and, like, the fluff. You don't actually need any hard rules. At least that's kind of the way I saw it.
Here, bang, bang, bang. On it.
And I agree. That's fine, you know. Like, the role-playing part should be free-flowing, but there's no support to it.
Yeah,
what kind of support do you need?
Well, a perform skill. A perform skill or a craft skill.
You know...
Or should we just pretend, like, all right, yeah, he's a Ladron fighter. Oh, yes, of course I can make sword. Yes, of course I can sing. No problem. Or you pull it out. Is there a way to measure it, that effect on people?
Well, like, I think
you can pick little bits and pieces that aren't covered by the rules, because you don't want, like, a 500-page rule book. But no, I agree with you, Jiro. There's a lot of things in just straight up, straight up role playing. Yeah, don't get comfortable with that. There's a lot of things I think in role playing that don't need the rules. And I know when 4E did come out, people were like, oh, it's role playing as with the
RLL,
not role playing with the E. But did they tell you to stop role-playing? Is there some rule that says, please do not imagine anything, please do not try to put on a voice, please do not, interact with the NPCs?
Of course no rule against it, but...
A lot of those rules, a lot of those interactions you don't need rules for, and I thought they had sufficient rules. Sure, maybe if you wanted to craft something... You wanted to be a very good painter, or you wanted to be a very good singer. Yeah, maybe they could have put in perform. But then again, that's a pretty easy house rule.
Absolutely. But also, that goes into the combat as well. In a role-playing game, I think that there should be some role-playing within the combat, too. Like, for example, jumping on top of the giant's head and start stabbing like that. How do you represent that when every turn you have to choose which card you're going to use?
But how would you represent that in 3.5? Or 3? Or 2?
You would just do it.
Well, I did it, and then I hit. But really, like, I think in that particular situation, there is no addition of D&D or in most role playing games. There's very few rules where I'm doing much more than just hitting it. Mm-hmm. This particular creature didn't really have any. It didn't have eyes. Its head wasn't really a weak spot, because I'm not sure it has a brain per se. It was an elemental, an earth elemental. I did it because it's kind of like cool and movie-esque and cinematic, but yeah, what rule does any role-playing game have to do that? If the head is not a particular weak point of this creature.
Mm-hmm. So. No, I actually agree with both of you, but like,
No, because we disagree.
I know. Like, you both make good points, right? The part I was going to say about...
if I had two gavels, I would second both of them.
All right. So you want to hear my point or not?
We're not doing it. Hold on.
So my point is the only way, pretty much the only way you could level up in D&D was through combat. Right, which is...
That's been a criticism of all editions of D&D, though.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Which is... Maybe just my GM or DM style, I felt more acutely aware of it in this one. I don't know why that is, but it felt kind of like, yeah, the only way to advance is to fight something. And I know they put in the skill challenges, and I know they put in, like, tie some XP to skill challenges. And yeah, you could house rule, you know, or award experience points for doing cool stuff in the story, but I'm not sure why.
Which Chris did house rule.
Yeah, it just really felt like for some reason that XP was tied to combat, and which is why I kind of agreed with Chris that it felt more like ROLL than ROLE at some times. Okay.
Yeah, and that said, like, the campaign I ran was built within and for Dungeons & Dragons, more the game rather than 4th edition specifically. Mm. I mean, we had an encounter almost every session, and even the ones where we didn't have an encounter, there was still a chance that there could have been one. Mm. So, I mean, that's just part of the way that I wanted to run the campaign.
Right.
But also within the combat itself, sorry to disagree with you, Yuge, but I did actually didn't like the powers all that much.
Oh.
I thought that every action you took had some special rules to it, and I thought it slowed it down too much. And I know it's a common criticism that 4E combat is slow, but yeah, I thought that was, for me, that's what felt like the primary reason for it being slow.
I mean, I definitely agree that combat slow is what I thought it was so fun, but I'm just a player, so...
I think the powers are a good idea, but I would like to, I don't know if it would work or not, but... I'd like to see maybe something where there's more limited powers. Mm. Like you said, Wayne, the example of everybody turns into a wizard. In 3.5, wizards could only cast maybe 10 spells a day.
Depending on your level and how powerful you are.
So you had to choose carefully on how to use them. And I wonder if the game wouldn't be better if you just had a few powers that you could use and then you'd have, like, an array of basic attacks like 3.5 had.
I always took more care in picking my feats. Because that just seemed better to me. It was always something that you had. Yeah. And I like that better than picking your powers.
Like, one of my complaints with the powers is, in and of themselves, they were okay. They were cool. Mm-hmm. And I think limited powers would be an option. My sort of gripe with them was they weren't reliable. You know, you're rolling a d20. You maybe... whatever percent chance you have of hitting, I didn't feel like there was any tactics behind it. It kind of didn't matter what power I used.
I always missed, right?
I would have this, like, huge daily power. I'm like, oh, this is the perfect time to use it. And, yeah, I'm relying on a die roll to see whether I hit or miss. And if I miss, that's it. I lose it for the rest of the day. I don't have it for the rest of the encounter. And
but I agree. Like, there's more than one occasion where I just said, oh, fuck it, just hit. Man.
Yeah, I think you said, oh, fuck it, just hit. But, like, if the powers, like, I didn't feel like there were any tactics behind it, right? It kind of didn't matter when I used Power X because I always had the same chance of hitting or missing, right?
That's true. Yeah.
That's kind of, statistically or not, that's how I felt. Like, if, you know, if there was some kind of bonus, or not even bonus, but, like, powers were more limited and more reliable, then I would say, yeah, I would be down with that, because then it would become more of a tactical choice of, ooh, I don't want to use my daily during this encounter, because it's really good, and I might run up against something bigger, you know, later on during the day, and I want to save it, where it almost kind of didn't matter. Like, if I save it, I still have exactly the same chance of missing. So what's the point of saving it?
That's true.
You disagree how you
do. Yeah, I definitely disagree. Because, I mean, in theory, there'd be some, like, leader-type character who would, like, buff your attack bonus so that you would actually be able to land your daily powers more reliably. You'd have action points to spend when you need absolutely have to plan something and things like that. Or you set up a situation where you've got combat advantage, and then that's where you use
your favorite.
Well, I was going to say, as someone who was half a leader, because I was actually kind of split,
and that might have been kind of.
I actually, before we changed over, we might change systems, I actually built a leader for the next part of the story.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was one of the psionic classes, the art, even though I didn't want to use the psionic skin, right? I just said it was something else. I didn't really see that many, and I built a level 8, didn't see that many, like, reuse powers or buff powers. Leader to me seemed a lot more just heal the person up so that they can keep getting beat on.
It depends on the type of leader, too. I don't know about the artist.
Like, I didn't look at other leaders.
Play with a warlord, and I didn't see...
Warlords didn't buff them up so much, though. They gave extra attacks, and...
But weren't they the ultimate leader? Like,
I don't know.
I think it's what the power choices and things like that.
It seems like a lot of times, like, you can give extra basic melee attacks, which in 4E pretty much suck, in my opinion, compared to the power.
For your class, yeah. When the fighter did it.
Yeah, or if you have
like a basic
expertise.
Melee attack.
It's okay.
Yeah, it's okay, but I don't know.
Maybe because there's just the one weapon.
Yeah. But I think essentials, though I haven't looked deeply into it, has helped that a lot. Like, for example, it's kind of moved fighters to where they don't have powers anymore, but they have stances, which are constantly active, and then they just use basic melees within those stances.
Which actually sounds better.
Much better,
someone who had a stance, stances were pretty cool, because you just kind of use it, it's reliable, and it stays until the end of the encounter, or until you take on a new stance, or get bloodied.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, where it you're like, you know what, this stance is perfect for the situation, I'm just going to turn it on, I'm not going to miss, and it would become more tactical.
How about you, Tom? Mm-hmm. Any criticisms?
Well, not much, because I enjoy the whole thing. It's a fun experience. But after hearing all this discussion about the powers, it kind of makes me want to go back to maybe 3 or 3.5, how you guys say that the powers are not so detailed, and you guys have to use more, it's more creative than you have to make, like, jump on table or hang from chandelier. That makes me feel like I want to try that next time if I'm a wizard.
Yeah.
For me, when I was a wizard, and I kept on just hitting my powers at the opponent only, at the enemy, and nothing else. But now, hearing that makes me feel like, okay, maybe next time I can try to, like, shoot an arrow at the ceiling and, like, crush some rocks and make them fall on enemies.
Yeah.
That makes sense. So it makes me feel like I want to try that kind of system now.
I thought the wizard, I didn't play the wizard, but you notice I ask a lot of questions. Can you do this? Can you do this? Because I wasn't familiar with which powers you had taken, and I didn't bother to read about the wizard. But there was a lot of spells that the wizard used to have that would have come in handy and would have been really cool. they were pretty essential. And that you didn't have. And I thought that was, you know, I didn't complain too much at the time, but I was like, oh, man, like you guys don't have that? And I would also ask you as the invoker or the divine spellcaster. And I just thought, you guys are, like, pretty much just dealing out, dishing out damage.
I mean,
but there was no subtle powers like shrink or growth or web or things like that.
There were utility powers. You got them every what, 5 levels?
Yeah, there were utility powers or rituals.
The ritual system is a good system.
Is that also new in 4E?
Yes. But I'll say most of the non-combat spells either got turned into utility powers or rituals.
Yeah. But there's some of them that are really useful that would be great to cast, you know, in combat or just near combat as, like, a utility thing, but instead it was a ritual, so you had to spend 10 minutes, so it's just ruled out, period.
Towards the beginning I did that. I was looking at rituals because I got that book. I'm like, oh, this would be, you know, a great ritual, and it costs, or it takes 30 minutes or 10 minutes to cast, meaning, all right, you're just not doing that during combat.
Period.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's a good system. I don't know, I feel like there should have been some kind of middle ground, I guess. All right,
Lyle, me.
All right.
Well, the reason why I did that hand motion is so it didn't look like I was
trying to... I know, that's why it's so much fun to reveal it.
the thing I didn't like, I actually wanted to, like, jump on to Chris's point, just to combat, because this is related to combat, and I think that 4E lacked danger. And
I
felt
more my campaign.
No, can I? That was not a finish.
Oh, sorry. Why are you glaring at me? I didn't interrupt first. That was Chris. All right.
Because the ability.
I still wanted to jump in there again.
Because the ability to take damage outstrips the ability to deal damage. Mm-hmm. And I felt that there was a lot of, like, things that should have been scary that weren't scary. Everyone knows about the Earth Elemental. We had a situation where I thought that the scene... I think the system failed the scene. I thought the scene was very cinematic. It would have put the Fellowship of the Ring rock troll taking on the whole party scene to shame. Like, you know, the Earth Elemental boiling out of the crowded city street. And then he knocks the wizard into a house, who then picks himself up and casts a spell. Instead of being, you know, like having a few limbs broken. Or when he grabs the halfling and beats the invoker with the halfling, and instead of like, oh,
that
well,
fun. That was fun.
You know, it's like you can either choose to play a puddle, Yujiro, or make a new character, but it was like, oh, so now I, you know, despite being used as a mace or a club, Yujiro was able to wiggle his halfling out of that situation afterwards.
And
with just, you know, a few
minimal damage.
Yeah, with minimal damage.
My invoker took, what, like 10 points of damage or something? Yeah. And
I would have preferred, you know, just to be constructive here, is I would have preferred hitting less for monsters and for us, in a lot of cases, hitting less, but when you hit, it matters. Because it just came down to, like, you're just sitting there, like, hit. And this, you know, when I foreshadowed, when I said why I like some of the lower-level combats more, is that I felt like when you hit, it did matter. And when you got hit, it did matter because you had a lot less to absorb impact. But as we progressed in the heroic tier, it became like my ability to damage these things isn't all that crash hot. And actually, their ability to damage me isn't all that crash hot. Like when we first encountered, I believe it was a white. And that was our first encounter with the 4E fear. I was actually really scared until I found out what the fear did. Mm. And I was like, oh, damn, now I'm out. I'm like running out of this house, and I was like, "Oh, I know."
What did fear do? It just did damage.
It was a -2 penalty or half damage.
Yeah,
I
think
like
I moved
that,
away, and then maybe did like it pushed me.
Yeah, I think kind of the push away.
Yeah, and that was it. But I remember like if you in third edition or things like that, or 3.5, when you were afraid, you were afraid.
Yeah.
Or other role playing games. But when we found the Medusa, fought the Medusa, one of the classic monsters of mythology. And just scary, like, you know, just the hero killer. And she took out two people straight away. Wow. And it was like they were just,
took
you know,
out,
like, it was like their foot was asleep. Oh, I got the tingle, so I'm going to be out for this round as I shake some life into my legs. it really took it away. And I don't know if you house ruled stuff, because I deliberately did not read the monster manual for 4E. Mm. So that things could be a real surprise.
I actually did house rule that. Tamil should have turned to stone.
Oh, well, then the fault is yours.
Can I ask, as the person who would have turned to stone, what would have happened to me?
You would have turned to stone.
And, like, looking at the 4E system from, you know, past experience, I would have only gotten, like, a minus, a penalty.
Oh, no, you would
have
been
a mortal. You'd have been stone.
You'd have been
turned. So that was it?
Yep.
Okay.
And then you had to find a way to make him back.
Yes, but that was going to be, it was the final episode,
right,
so yeah. I wasn't going to do that.
All right, well, I take that back.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, I take back the actual Medusa example, but for the most part, I felt that it kind of lacked a little bit of...
I think that was partly my fault.
So did you decide to skip out on the pure stuff, fear at the end?
No, I actually just didn't do it well enough. Mm-hmm. When I think I never took into account well enough your guys' advancement, not with hit points and damage dealing, but with, like, your zones and effects. Because I remember when we had when Ian, the dwarf, turned into the demon and came back at you guys, like that, he didn't do jack. I mean, granted, I rolled poorly.
Well, because I think that was the one session where I rolled, like, 2 critical hits with my powers.
Was that in the Elf Village?
No, that was after. In the temple up at the top of the mountain.
Oh, yeah.
Remember,
But it was just like, after everybody all put a zone on him and some kind of effect, he couldn't move, he was dazed, like, he couldn't do anything. And then he maybe had one action, a turn, that was -2, and even then I rolled poorly. But I think I noticed at that point, so the next set of monsters, I bumped up quite a bit.
Who was the next set of the monsters?
I think the next was actually the Rock Elemental.
So he had that shake-off effect.
Exactly. But that's something that that they recommend giving to solos anyway, because otherwise they'll just be zoned out of existence. don't know, that's, yeah, that was one of the things that made me think about choosing a different system for the next part, use the zones. You know, when we were having that final fight, every turn there were two or three, okay, now he gets a minus to this, and he's got vulnerable five versus here, and then I've got a plus three bonus, and it's just too much to keep
Wait,
track
are you
of.
Talking about zones or conditions more?
Yeah,
well, like sorry, zones on zones the field and conditions.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. So, yeah, towards the end, you guys had more ability to control the battlefield than I had thought of, so you restricted the monsters a lot compared to what they should have been able to do.
Well, also because we're lucky, right? Like you said before, it's a dice roll.
Maybe.
Yeah, like, it's like a 50% chance.
Well, I'll say this. As the quote-unquote controller, mm-hmm. well, one of the controllers, I guess Tom was, Wizard was a controller too,
yeah.
I actually didn't feel like a controller. Which is part of the reason why I dropped some of those like slow spells and everything. Mm-hmm. Like I don't know if it's only because we usually fought solos, but like my zone effects or like my blast things, just like, and there's only one guy, and there's only one guy in this fight. So like I didn't really feel like I was controlling the battlefield all that much. So I'm curious as to why. We didn't run across more minions.
I realized that about halfway. Like, in the early game, there were a lot of group fights. There were the goblins and the hobgoblins and things like that. But once you started getting into, like, the high-level stuff, it was just that. It was like you were finding the leaders of this cult
right.
and their minions and such. Minions like bodyguards and
right.
tough guys. So there weren't many chances for those that I had planned for. I tried to throw in a couple. You remember the fire bats?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm.
that? That was an entirely minion fight. The actually fire elementals as well in the elven forest.
And I was going to say, the elven forest, and then this gets into the story, I think there were minions in that. There were minions on, like, both sides, because I think the elves had, like, one
yeah,
hit point or something.
Minions as well.
I really enjoyed that fight. That may have been the last fight that I really thoroughly enjoyed, because it kind of ties into Lyle's... It seemed like we were doing damage, right? When we hit something, it mattered.
And you dropped in that, too.
And so. I died in that one,
yeah.
right?
Well, I dropped.
Yeah, I think you died in that one, too. But, like, on both sides it was happening because you had, you know, minions. Like, you know, a hobgoblin would hit an elf or kick him off the ladder, and that was it. He died, right? Or, we would hit someone and they died. And there was a boss that we were fighting.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, that... cinematically, that fight felt dangerous because things were dying all around us. Even player characters died. But and so that might be something people want to do to kind of put back in that danger, right?
And
even
I think
if
that's
fighting solos,
supposed to be done as well. I think it's supposed to be a sequence of smaller combats rather than a few large combats, which is the way I prefer to run the story. So maybe 4 is just not the best match for what I wanted to do. But.
Well, I think it was also the scheduling thing.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. Because no one wants to, like, run three combats in a row where all you're fighting is minions and little nobodies. You know, you want to get to kind of the big guys. So.
What about you, Joe? What didn't you like about it? You seem to be actually the biggest fan of the system.
Yeah.
So what was something that you could have done without?
I'm actually pretty much okay with the system, so...
That's cool,
yeah.
So kind of like there's nothing... Well, me, like,
that,
there's nothing...
Nothing that really bothers me about the system. Yeah.
That's good.
I understand what everyone's saying, but, I mean, I don't think it's that big of a deal.
Out of curiosity, which was your favorite encounter?
Ooh, that's a difficult one. I definitely enjoyed the Elven Forest fight.
Mm-hmm.
I loved the Rock Monster.
Maybe
his second phase, definitely.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
We can talk about that. The phasing system, too.
I'm sorry?
We can talk about the phase system, too, right? That's new, isn't it? The phase system?
Oh, like, he means the three phase. So.
Oh, yeah. That's something to say. I read quite a few articles online about... Oh, sorry.
No,
go ahead. Okay.
I'm just planning what I'm going to say.
How to slam that gavel. About setting up solo fights as kind of three separate encounters combined within one encounter.
Was that like your idea? Was that
I found... I thought about something like that early on, but I split it up into two.
Mm-hmm.
So originally the final boss fight was going to be two sets, but I read online about setting up in three, because that's the way a lot of video games do it, and that's a way that you can kind of set up it's almost like a 3X system.
So it's not an official 4E system?
No, not at all.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But it's a lot of really good advice, and I think it works better than before.
And I enjoyed it too.
We did one solo fight before the demon in the basement. It was boring. Yeah, I mean,
boring for you?
Yes.
Because I actually enjoyed that fight more than the rock. If you hadn't said that there was three phases to that rock elemental, I wouldn't have noticed.
Huh.
The only thing was you wiped all your hit points off the dry erase board. Mm-hmm. And
I think he disappeared too. Kind of went back into the earth and then popped.
But you know that is that a new phase? I wouldn't have noticed a real difference. Basically, he kind of brawled, and was throwing people into houses, which sounds cool, except they just got back up. And they're like wizards in robes getting back up.
Yeah.
Then he kind of started throwing rocks at us, and then he started brawling again. Like, I didn't see that as significantly different.
Okay.
So maybe all the behind-the-scenes stuff for you, it made it more interesting, but for me as a player, and I know Tom disagrees, but that didn't really do anything. I would say actually that was probably my least favorite combat, rock elemental, just because it really emphasized my big complaint about, I guess, the latter heroic tier is this. All right, well if our rogue can pick himself up after being used as a club, and knocking down the invoker, and that he's just got like a little concussion.
But doesn't that kind of feed into you were saying about it being such a superhero kind of game? Doesn't that kind of match that?
I think it kind of goes over the top a little bit. Like, I mean, it's one thing to be like heroic, but that crossed the line a little bit too ridiculous. And I didn't mean to steal your answer. Maybe you could disagree with
me. I actually thank you. I mean, that's what it would be, because if you were to take somebody like, let's say, Superman or something like that, or even lesser, you know, Martian Manhunter, or you knock it down even a little bit more, Captain America, who is a human, but you kind of expect that guy to get in and brawl. So when he gets knocked into, I think even Captain America, because he is like just a peak human or a slightly enhanced human, if you knocked him in and he makes an impression in a house, and then he shakes it off, even you'd be like, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you would expect like the really super-powered people to be able to do that, but a wizard who maybe is the equivalent of, although you weren't in a wheelchair, Professor X or Dr. Druid, or, you know, like a mentalist, but you knocked one of those guys into it, and then he picks himself up. You're like, huh, really?
Yeah, wait a minute.
Yeah, hold on, you know.
I see what you're saying. What did you think of the last fight, then, the final?
I think,
because that was the same three-tier system as well.
Like I said, it that makes no difference. Okay. Like, it's not that I knew you were using that system, so I could kind of spot it, and it seemed to add to the story, but as far as adding to the combat, I think I probably would have saved this for part two, but I think the things that you personally did with the setting, such as the moving rocks and stuff like that, I think that actually added to the combat, as opposed to the actual anything's in the 4E mechanics.
Huh.
I don't think anything in the 4E mechanics added to the combat, and I thought combat was pretty draggy.
Okay. Yeah, it was slow. Well, that's 4E, though.
Yeah, and I think it's probably no secret there's a couple players in your group, myself and I believe Wayne, who are more into all the interaction than the combat, to the point that combat was kind of just something to get through.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of that was the system, but certainly a system that seems to be designed to prolong the combat. It's not going to appeal to somebody like myself.
That might be, that might be our DM styles too, because having played in games run by both of you and run a game, like in some 3.5 games that I was running for you, like, I don't think there would be a die roll the entire session, or maybe it would be like a diplomacy die roll, and I still ended those things, and correct me if I'm wrong, thinking you really enjoyed those. I'm thinking of like, when you would go to like the castle.
Oh yeah, that was a good session. But what I was thinking is you've actually supported Yujiro's point that he made earlier in this episode.
Which was what?
Which a lot of role-playing doesn't need rules.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Well done, Yujiro. You've won your arguments. Or Wayne's won it for you.
Yeah.
Unwittingly.
Yeah, unwittingly. Like usual.
Yes.
Well, despite the fact that I disagreed with you on that, I consider that a successful session too of role playing role. If to go through a session without needing the dice, there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great time.
And 4E certainly doesn't inhibit that. It's just once the combat starts, you're like, oh, okay, we're strapped in for a couple hours.
Once the dice came out, or once the swords came out, like I kind of felt like like role playing was over. Because I kind of knew that we wouldn't finish the encounter.
Just thinking, you want me to draw my sword? Because we're going to go down a very long path. Can't put this genie back in the bottle because it'll take a long, long, long time. So.
Okay.
Cool.
All right.
All right. Sounds good. So thank you for listening to our long conversation on 4D.
Part 1, mechanics-wise.
And I'm sure it's only whet your appetite for part 2. But we actually look into the campaign itself. So Chris will explain what the Red Hands campaign was about. Yes. And we'll talk about things that we liked about that. Mm-hmm. And things that we didn't like. So it may get a little bit raw.
The dice might come out. All right, thanks everybody. See you next time.
So you finished reading the dozen files.
Oh, 500 pages.
Good luck.
I'm not taking that as a go. I'm really lucky.
Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.